Starting before the COVID-19 pandemic and then intensifying, the need for skilled workforce across various trades has become apparent. The demand for skilled tradespeople has doubled in many areas, all while the number of students entering training programs has decreased. You probably even experienced this in your own community if you're looking for someone to work in your car, to come in and fix drywall, to do something for plumbing. It might take you a long time to get that done just because there's not enough people to do it. Finding ways to help students discover and thrive in skilled trade training will be essential for both local and national economies moving forward. That will be our topic of discussion on this episode of Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUV Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Joining me on this episode of Teaching Matters is Jeremy Oskins, who is an automotive and robotics teacher at Comanche ISD in Comanche, Texas, a community located just southwest of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Jeremy has developed an innovative opportunity set for students to learn skilled trades, particularly in the automotive industry. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today on Teaching Matters. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So before we get into what you're doing with your students in your classroom, I want to learn a little bit about you and a little bit about Comanche, where you live. Can you start by talking about sort of what your background is and what brought you into teaching?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a 30-year veteran. I started out automotive. Let's not talk about how long ago that was. I did automotive for about 12 years and then got into the heavy equipment. So 30 years in the trade. I was on a teaching platform at Bobcat, learning to be one of their instructors for them. But just getting old and want to share my trade and want to just build these kids up. I've seen so many opportunities missed for these young people to come out into this trade. So just trying to get people out there. I'm in Comanche, Texas, which is a small agricultural town. We've got a population of about 4,500. We're not surrounded by very many big towns. We're 2.5 hours from the Metroplex. We're 2.5 hours from Austin. So we're kind of secluded out here. It's a very rural community. It's a good community. We stick together. But we're mostly supported by pecan farms and dairy farms out here. So, a lot of agricultural based.
Do a lot of the students that go through, is it Comanche High School? Is that the name of your school?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So the students going through Comanche High School, what are the types of things that you tend to see them going into? So, I assume that you've got a cohort of students that will end up going to some form of a higher education institution. I assume you have some students going into workforce, in their community. What are the draws for them if they're wanting to enter the workforce? I mean, is it entirely agriculture? Is there any other type of opportunities for them?
There is. A lot of them stay here and do the agricultural. A lot of them stay here and work their local jobs. I see a lot of medical field, which we do have a CTE program for that. I am seeing some industry. I see a lot of teachers. We have a lot of return people that come back and get into the education. And a lot of them are just some of your smaller business owners here. They come back and either take over family business or they're start their own small business here. Other than that, they're usually going to the bigger cities and starting into the jobs, and you start to pan out to your doctors and lawyers and engineers. And last year, I think we had a few that even went into aviation mechanics. So, they spread out there. So if they're staying here, it's a limited source of what they're going to be doing.
When I started the intro to the podcast, I was talking about, sort of this nationwide shortage of skilled laborers. And I know in my community, all those examples I said of anything from getting your car worked on to getting drywall repaired, a plumber, it's really hard. And when you do find people, oftentimes the labor cost is more than almost doubled, to what it was a few years ago. What are the ways in, your part of basically Central Texas or Comanche specifically, how are you seeing the skilled labor shortage sort of affect things?
Absolutely. So the pay rates have actually gone up. So the pay rate's going up to try to keep these people in these smaller towns working. Prime example here at our local Chevy dealership, they're required to have so many certified technicians, and their master tech or world tech, as they call it in the GM world, they're actually paying him $55 an hour and a living expense to stay here. Without him, that dealership can't function, have their warranty or anything like that. So in them having to put that kind of money out for that kind of gentleman to be there, which is great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your service repairs are going to go up. And being rural, your parts are going to go up because they've got to, you know, be shipped in and the trucking and the storage and all that. So, it actually affects, I think it affects the rural part of our area in that sense more than it does in the bigger metroplexes and bigger cities.
Yeah, I agree, because we're about an hour and 20 minutes from Columbus, which is the biggest city in Ohio that we're close to. And I think they have definite labor shortages up there in the trades. But down here, just for example, I had a friend had a deer strike on their car, and they had to book starting now for their car to be worked on sometime in late December, just because the local auto body shop, they were just booking that far out. It's kind of crazy. Can you talk a little bit about, we were talking before we started the recording, the fact that you do robotics, but that's more of a club just for staffing reasons, it sounds like. What are the courses that you teach in automotive right now? And kind of talk about, you know, the number of students that you're teaching in those courses and sort of what your curriculum is and trying to help students discover what the skills are that they need to develop if they want to go into automobile trade work.
Sure. So my teaching pathway is, I have a small engines one, which is your basic, internal combustion engine, which can get you into the auto program. That moves to a small engines two, where they get into the diagnostics and repair. And I try to do a cradle to grave in that class, where basically we take in customers' machines. You know, they do a work order. So we run it. We try to run it as it was an actual repair facility. So they're getting the experience of meeting the customer, bringing in the work, writing the work up, diagnosing the machine, repairing the machine, ordering the parts, and then delivering that back to the customer. So they're seeing the whole aspect. And small engines too, those youngsters, when they come out, will have an EETC, which is an industry-based certification that they'll take. So that basically says that they're qualified to work in a small engine shop. And then from there, they can move to an automotive technology one, which is basically maintenance and light repair. It's a basics. We cover a lot of the basics, a little bit of review from small engines. And that moves them into a maintenance and light repair situation where, you know, it's oil changes, understanding the fundamentals of the car, tire changes. Basically, you know, your small engine repair. I'm sorry, not small engine repair, but your smaller tune-up repairs, basic repairs, entry-level technician. Then they move to an automotive technology 2 program, which is a two-hour class. That's a practicum program. And in that class, I get them jobs out in the community. So they're working with my local people. Some of them are going to end up traveling to some of the cities that are 20, 30 miles out. So they're earning a task sheet, or they're earning a certification, an actual task that they complete. But they're in the field also working for our local dealerships, our local programs. And I've got them working for everything, you know, from a local auto dealership. I've got some youngsters that are working at a local rental facility where they're working on small equipment. And then I've got some that are actually working at tractor dealerships. Hmm. And so I spread that out as far as I can, anywhere I get them experience. When they get out of there, they will take whoever they're working for. I haven't got them all set up, but a prime example with our local Chevy house, I have them set up. They have given me the software so that my student, when he's with me or she is with me, they are actually completing the factory training. So the idea is if that student's with GM or Ford, they get sponsored if they like them. The dealership takes them on, and basically they get training through me and then through the dealership, so that they don't really go to a tech school. They actually are working for that facility and getting factory training at the same time.
That sounds really like an innovative, you know, sort of a internship opportunity for the students. How did you sort of broker those deals with the local dealerships and the other places that they're working? I mean, I assume that there's a benefit for them of you know, trying to get workers in, but that's also hard to put together, you know, for a teacher. How did you do that?
Absolutely. So I was a little bit lucky here at Comanche. The local Chevy house was ready to do that. They wanted to do that. The program wasn't quite ready for us to do that. And so when I came in, we started building and working that way. I noticed that need when I was in the field myself, and we were trying to do some of those things. One of the things we were working on at Bobcat North America, And so just taking the lead and working with my local Chevy house, we've expanded that to everyone else. And so we've expanded that to any repair facility, even hydraulics. If the students are interested in hydraulics, we'll get them into a hydraulic place and let them work. It's still considered, you know, part of the automotive industry, and they still work on a lot of the same things. So anywhere that that's industry based, I'll get them in there, and then we'll work on getting them their industry based certification. So
when a student goes through your classes and they're, you know, doing these off campus learning experiences with, you know, with whatever organization they're in, once they graduate from high school, what sort of then are their steps to, you know, getting into the career? Do they still have apprenticeships to do, or do they just sort of walk into a job?
Well, that all depends on who they go to work for and what career path they want to take. So some of these students are working for our local companies, but I've got two that have already committed to another technical school. I took them to a technical school and they've already committed. So they're getting their task sheets, they're getting their ASC certifications through the high school, and then they will continue on to a tech school because the local dealerships that were here, they did not want to stay with them. So they're getting their experience. So they really have an option. They can either A, go through our program and get some IBCs and not work anywhere, because I do have two students in my practicum program. They're not working at a dealership, but we run our Comanche High School auto shop like a full working facility. So they're getting, you know, they're getting their experience and their IBCs. So they have the opportunity to either go to a tech school, which I help them get to. We do visits and things like that. They can go to a work program with a dealership or a manufacturer and work through them. And then some of these manufacturers will actually sponsor them to go to school first and then bring them in and help them pay for their tools and their relocation and also their school. So there's really kind of three different pathways that they could go going through my program. And it kind of gives them a lot of options. So they're not really, you know, pigeonholed into going to one program. You know, this is how we do it here at Comanche, and that's it. No, that, you know, you got to diversify because there's so many different programs out there and there's so many opportunities that you have to put all of them in front of the student and let them choose, because what works for one student's not going to work for another.
Yeah.
You know, geographical location, what their interests are, what the manufacturer requires, that person's skill level, how much they want to put into it, what actual type of technician they want to be. So there's a lot of factors and stipulations in there that all have to jive together to make it work for that student. And so you got to go out there and go find them and figure out what's going to work for that particular student. And what works for one definitely does not work for another. So
they are still high school kids, right? So
they are still high school kids. Yes, sir. Yeah, they're still high school kids. I was supposed to go on a career pathway to be a technical trainer for Bobcat North America and the opportunity to come teach high school kids. And I got to tell you, that's the scaredest I've ever been in my entire life. But looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. I love it. I love catching them this early and being able to help them teach their bad habits, as they say in the industry.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to date myself a little bit. I graduated high school in 87, but I can remember back to when I entered, you know, the high school in ninth grade. I had, you know, taken my woodshop classes and industrial arts classes in middle school and went into a class much like your first auto tech class, where I, you know, worked with a couple kids tearing apart an engine, putting it back together and measuring things. So I kind of remember going through that, and I still use a lot of those skills from my courses like that today. I don't do as much changing of oil anymore, but I know how to do it. The point to my saying that is, you know, you're getting students at a pretty early age when they're transitioning into high school. Is there anything about, you know, your courses that you think sort of draws students into it? I mean, you know, you're not, I assume you maybe do some recruiting, but, you know, what is it that's going to cause a kid at Comanche to make a decision to, you know, take the Auto Tech 1 class and sort of start down that career path?
It's hands-on. It gets them out of the classroom, for one. The activities and things we do are pretty lucrative. Most kids, let's face it, when they're 16, 17 years old, automobile becomes a major thing in their life. A driver's license becomes a major thing in their life, becomes something important to them. So a lot of the students, when they join into my program, their interest really isn't to be a tech or to continue as a career. It's really, hey, that looks like something fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I catch them. you know, I can spark their interest and get them interested in what's going on. And they may not necessarily take this as something they do for the rest of their life, but in my class and what I teach is I don't teach a lot of memory and a lot of memorizing things. I try to get them their basic skills, and I call it a method of madness. I really want them to use their heads. I tell them this is a thinking class. You're not going to come in and get on your computer and Google how to do something and it gets done. You're going to have to use your mind. You're going to have to come up with a diagnostic path, and you're going to have to develop a method of madness, I call it, to where you're problem solving. And a lot of the things I teach, they don't just apply to automotive. They apply to, you know, everyday life skills and a lot of other careers too. So the idea is to make it as fun as I can, but get the knowledge into them at the same time. And that's where you got to kind of bridge the gap with them.
So this summer, or this last summer in 2024, you participated with five of your students in a technical training program called Ignite that was at Universal Technical Institute, and Napa Auto Parts had some partnership with that. Can you kind of talk about what that training program was and what your students experienced? And I'll ask you a few more questions about that whole thing, but I kind of want to get an overview of what the program is and what your students did.
Sure. So, funny story, the five that I took, none of them I take that back. One of them was in my automotive program. The other four were in my robotics, and they all showed interest in vehicles. So Universal Technical Institute has a program called Summer Ignite, and that's where they invite junior and senior high school kids to come and spend 3 weeks up there. They get to go through an actual technical course and see what a full-time student, registered student at Universal Technical Institute would do. And it just gave them an opportunity to go up there and see, okay, this is what actually happens. You know, this is what I have to get to. But I invited those four because they had not got to see or do a whole lot of things, and they did show interest in automotive. So we gathered the funds. We decided to rent an Airbnb. So I lived with five young men in the Airbnb, which I have many stories to tell.
I'll bet you do.
It was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for nothing. I can't wait to do it again next year. But it was an opportunity to get them out and see, you know, what they had available to them outside of Comanche, Texas. Taking them to Austin, to a big city, was a first thing for some of those young men. They hadn't got to do and see some of those things. So getting them to that school, let them see what actually happens at a tech school, what could happen afterwards. I taught them basically how to make connections. You know, connections are very important in this trade. Make connections. And I've got one student that decided, nah, he's not doing that. But he got the opportunity to get out and see that that's not what I want to do. And a lot of kids don't get that chance to go experience something like that, to say, hey, I do want to do this for a living, or hey, that ain't for me. And so using those resources to get those kids up there was great. Now that we've come back and we've got to share our stories, I've got a ton of them that are already saying, I want to go to the Ignite program. I want to go to the Ignite program. I want to experience that. It's really interesting because when they went through the class, they at night we played a video game. You know, these youngsters are big into those video games. Mm-hmm. But one of the video games they played was a racing game, and they were getting a kick out of it because they could set their race car up in the game. And it was a suspension and steering class that they took. And one of the kids said, well, he says, I know what this stuff means now. He says, I can set my car up. And so they ended up getting more into setting the cars up and making them perform on the game than they actually did competing. So it was really neat to see how they applied that knowledge to a video game that they enjoyed, you know. So it was a great, great experience. And great for the kids, like I said, because we're in rural areas. So getting them out. A lot of them, they see those opportunities, but they feel like they're not attainable. I always get the question, how, Mr. Hoskins, how am I going to afford to go to Austin? How am I going to afford to go to Wyoming? I got one student that wants to go to MMI in Florida. How am I going to afford to do that? And by going to this program and talking to the recruiters and stuff up there, they showed him how it was possible that he could actually be a motorcycle mechanic. He could actually go to school in Florida. It was attainable. And those are things that he never would have got answers for if we hadn't been able to introduce that to him.
What was a typical day like for them while they were in that program? And it was a week long. Am I remembering that right?
Three weeks. It was three
weeks. Oh, 3 weeks. Okay.
Yes, sir. So we traveled up there. We stayed in our Airbnb. We didn't have to be at school, or they didn't have to be at school until 9:30 in the morning. So we got up. We made breakfast and enjoyed each other's company. And then I dropped them off at school. which we were about 2 miles away from. I then came back and I was doing my training courses. I made lunch for them, or I brought them lunch and we ate lunch. When they got back, they got out at 1:30. So, four of them were footballers. So you can understand how loud their stomachs were growling when I got them back to the house or got them fed, yeah. Got them fed. And then we would spend the day doing other things. So we spent days doing fun activities, kayaking and swimming together, going to Bass Pro Shops, going to a lot of places that they had never been. But the other things I did is I took them to Austin Community College, let them visit Austin Community College. We visited the Toyota T10 program. I took them to a few dealerships and let them visit the dealerships and see how they worked in the dealerships, how they paid, what they required of them, how the other techs were living, what kind of tools they needed. I took them to Austin Speed Shop, which is a kind of a famous speed shop that Jesse James had started on the Discovery Channel. We got to go in there. The gentleman brought us in there that owns it now and let us look at the high-end cars and show them what's all about to be in a high-end car. And at the evening times, we spent eating dinner and we played games. And since I had four footballers, they had to do their workout so that our athletic director wouldn't, he mentioned very, very many times that make sure those boys are working out while you got them, 'cause they got football when they get back. So, we just spent the day together and visited a lot of things, had a great time. And then while they were in their class, I basically would debrief them every day. What'd you guys do today? How was it? What'd you learn? What are you doing tomorrow? And just enjoyed it.
How did you go about raising the, you had to get some financial support for all of those activities for the students. How'd you go about doing that?
I don't know where my administrator got the money, but I went to her about the program and she figured out how to get it to me.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know where she got it. But when I introduced the program to her, we kind of came up with a budget, saw what it was going to cost. Then we figured out we could rent an Airbnb and we could cook and we could make that happen. They provided me with a vehicle and a gas card. And I'm sure that if I needed more, the administrator I have would have taken care of me for that program. So it was a great use of resources. I think I was able to put that whole program together for about $3,200, yeah. I think is what it cost. So yeah. it was great. I mean, it was $3,200 well spent. I can't wait to spend that next year. So
yeah. Well, it's great. It's great to have, support from your administration, because, the way you describe it, that was a truly transformative experience for, for those students that went up there.
Absolutely. Now, I am flying to Wyotech in Wyoming at the end of this month, and I'm trying to build the same relations with them. Mm-hmm. Wyotech is a very sought after a tech school, and they're going to fly me up there end of October. I'm supposed to spend a couple of days with them, hoping to get some kind of a summer program or something going with them. Working with ACC to do the same thing. And then there's another college called Brookhaven that I'm fixing to start working with to see if we can get something built with them. So that way they can, every tech school has a different opportunity, a different outline, a little bit different teaching, a different geographical area, and all those things will appeal to a student in different ways. So,
yeah. And I noticed when I was looking at the information on the Ignite program that they actually have locations sort of around the country, and,
yes, sir.
And you went to the one in Austin, but I noticed that there were several around the country. So
I graduated from the one in Houston in 1995, 96. That's been too long ago. So I'm a little bit biased on the UTI, and I do have a little bit of connections there. So when our recruiter came down and said there was an Ignite program, I said, by gosh, I want to get my kids over. Mm-hmm. So, driving 130 miles was well worth it. It was a great experience. I mean, even if they don't become techs, we had a great experience. I had a great bonding experience with these young people. And, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was awesome.
Since one of the hats that you wore was being a cook, did your guys have a favorite meal?
I know they had an unfavorite one. I promise you that. pancakes. They love pancakes. As a matter of fact, when one of the students came back, the mom had actually sent me a video that morning of her son telling her that her pancakes weren't as good as Mr. Oskin. So I tell you what, that put me pretty high on life that day.
Yeah, that's great. So I want to switch gears just a little bit. We talked earlier about sort of the need for skilled trades and, trying to get, 16-year-old, you know, kids to see the opportunities for that and go into it. And you know, there's a lot of things that's causing that not to happen at the scale that probably it needs to happen, you know, for all of us. What do you think are some of the barriers that's not getting, you know, young students into the trades, either automotive specifically or other trades in general? You know, why is that happening?
It's a mindset. I believe it's a mindset we've created. Mm-hmm. And when I say mindset, used to be that a automobile or a heavy equipment mechanic was considered a dirty, low-paying job. And it is, it can be a dirty job. It is a dirty job. And we taught so many of these kids college, college, college. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what they don't realize is the risk versus reward is very awesome. I call it a hero or zero factor. So when you're repairing something, you can become a hero or zero real fast. The cool part about it is if you do become a zero, you always have an opportunity to become a hero again on that same project. Mm-hmm. And so we've created this mindset that it's this dirty non-paying job. And it's not. It's a very rewarding career. And it can lead to other careers too. I mean, you're not just stuck as a technician or in the trades. And so we have to get past that mindset. I also believe that a lot of students or young people have never had the chance to get the sense of gratitude or sense of accomplishment. And once you get a student in there who's actually repaired an engine or brought something to life, I teach them that these engines are living, breathing animals. You know, they need to eat. They eat fuel. They need to breathe just like a human. They need to digest what they've ate and they breathe. And then they got to spit it out the muffler just like a human. So if you think about how a human lives, then you can repair a motor because they work the same. It's a living, breathing animal. And once they bring a living, breathing animal to life and they get that sense of accomplishment, you got them hooked. That's all there is to it. They get to stand there and say, I did this. I built this. I fixed this. And you can't take that away from them. That's something they'll have forever. And so once you get them in there and you get them to feel that sense of accomplishment and get through that repair and know that they did that on their own, whether they're a technician or not, you've taught them. You got them. They're yours. And then all you got to do is just keep with them. So
I will say that the courses, because I took, you know, in my background, I had wood shop, a couple classes in that. I took automotive. I took a welding class. And, you know, I will say that I do more things than a lot of the people, even my age, that I see, you know, around my house. And, you know, I during COVID, I put a wood shop in my garage so that my wife can't park the car in there anymore. And, you know, you come back to those things. And even though that wasn't a part of my career, I wouldn't trade my experience with, you know, with my teachers in those classes for anything because, you know, like you said, it helps you figure stuff out. And
absolutely.
And, you know, that you're right. That applies to a lot of things in life. I guess the last question that I have, because I really appreciated, you know, what you just said about sort of problem solving and figuring it out. I think that, you know, people that don't get backgrounds in, you know, sort of hands-on things like this, they make an incorrect assumption that if students goes into the skilled trade training, that they're probably not the same type of student that's going to be interested in, you know, other types of courses like math, reading, problem solving. And the way you talk about it, you don't think that's true. You think they're just learning in a different way, right?
Absolutely. So, and someone's probably going to take this the wrong way, but if you equate what a doctor has to learn and how much knowledge they have to have and continue to have, because, you know, medical practices change and they're constantly evolving. Medicines are constantly evolving. Automobile technician or heavy equipment technician has to do as much, if not more, training than a doctor. And again, I'm not trying to degrade what a doctor does. Mm-hmm. They're working on the real animal. We're working on the, you know, the man-made animal. And so if you equate those two together, there's a ton of training that a technician has to do throughout their life. And it's continuous because we're ever evolving on technology. And so if you go in with the mindset that, okay, I've learned a little bit of math and I've learned a little bit of repair, you're not going to make it. You have to continue that education. And even at almost 50 years old, I'm still learning new things that have evolved. I mean, the technology is crazy. And so you have to let them know that they're going to continue to learn. I guess what I'm saying is we as technicians have to do as much as a doctor to do our trade. So there's a lot to it. It's a very technological trait.
Yeah. I mean, to that point about technology, I mean, Where do you sort of see sort of the high school level education for, you know, automotive or other types of trades like that going, given that, you know, all of our cars have more computer chips in it than, you know, ever before, and that's not going to diminish. That's going to keep continuing to increase. You know, how do we keep our students on that curve, given that that curve is changing so quickly?
Well, they're capable of doing it. I mean, if you go to any of the newer repair facilities, most of the repairs that they're doing is maintenance. It's mostly computer, or it's operator error, especially in the equipment field. It's a lot of operator error. They don't understand how their equipment's supposed to work. And you have those laptops, and you have those iPads and all those things that those young people have, and they can navigate those. I have a lot of young people that come in that know how to write code and do a lot of things that they've learned playing on those phones. And that's a lot of the technology that they'll use out in the field. And so using that technology and helping them learn that is help them stay with it, knowing that what they play with every day, it could be part of their career. There's not a ton of nuts and bolts and repairing and major repairs and stuff like that. It's mostly maintenance, light repair, and most of your repairs are computer or electronic related. So keeping them up on those is just got to spark their interest.
Yeah.
And they play with it every day. I mean, those video games and the robots that they're playing with, the little robots and the phones and the apps and all that stuff, they play with it every day. You just got to have them, you know, format that knowledge into the technical side or the trade side.
Jeremy, it's been great getting to know you, and it's heartwarming to hear, you know, your story from the summer, but just more broadly, you know, the way that you're trying to work with your students. You're very, a very committed teacher, and your students are lucky to have you, and I really appreciate you being on.
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. My guest today was Jeremy Oskins. He's a teacher at Comanche ISD in Comanche, Texas. Thanks for listening to Teaching Matters. Our staff that helped us put this together is assistant producers April Koska and Trinity Sweet. Remember that if you're listening to this on any of the podcasting platforms like Spotify or Apple or NPR, we just transitioned to YouTube, so you can catch us on our YouTube channel. All you have to do is search for Teaching Matters Podcast, and you'll be able to watch Jeremy and I talk to each other on video as well as listening to us on audio, and we hope that you'll have fun doing that. Thanks for listening, and keep looking for new episodes as we're starting our new season. We're excited to have you join us again this year, and we hope everyone has a great day.